This podcast is brought to you by Holman Contracting Group in Tuscaloosa. Holman Contracting Group is your go-to company for roofing, remodeling, and new construction homes. You can make your dream home a reality. Give them a call at 205-523-7088. You can also contact them at holmancontractors.com. That's HolmanContractors.com. Or on Facebook. Phone number is 205-523-7088. Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones. We're continuing our series looking at the road to Nick Saban of all the Alabama football coaches in between Coach Bryant and Coach Saban. If you listened last week, we left off talking about Mike Dubose and the Albert Means scandal. Now we're going to pick up talking about Dennis Franchione and the Albert Means scandal. So, Cecil, you're back.
Yes, how are y'all?
As well as Taylor Watson, our expert from the Bryant Museum. Taylor, how are you doing?
I wouldn't call me an expert, but thanks for having me back.
You're more of an expert than me, and they put me in charge of this thing. So, yeah. Dennis Franchione came to Alabama from TCU after the Mike Dubose era ended, kind of crashed and burned in a number of different ways. Mm-hmm. He had head coaching experience. He had the support of Mal Moore. He was a change in kind of tenor from Mike Dubose. What were some of the things that Alabama was looking for? Who were some of the other candidates who were considered at the time he was hired?
The other candidates, Butch Davis, Frank Beamer. There were several, most of who you would consider big names. At that time, they did not know what the outcome of the NCAA case would be, although the rumors were that it would not be good. Butch Davis did not take the job for that reason. I think he would have taken the job otherwise had he felt certain that it would be clear. Dennis Franchione was the coach at TCU, had success, had had LaDainian Tomlinson, which will give you success. And felt like he had assurances from some people at Alabama that it wasn't going to be all that bad and that they'd stick with him and weather it. And so certainly got a significant salary boost from what he was making at TCU and took the job and came in for the 2001 season.
I think they had talked to Mike Riley and Pittsburgh head coach Walt Harris, I think, who was, I believe, a Tennessee grad.
Yeah, I think Walt talked more about Walt than anybody here actually considered hiring Walt.
Okay, now for folks who might not have been alive at that point or were just barely alive at that point or were not following Alabama at that point like myself, the NCAA sanctions had not come down at the time that Franchione had been hired. How much discussion was there about the possibility of this or about an investigation at the time that the coaching search was underway?
Oh, it was a nonstop conversation.
So it was a big factor during the coaching
absolutely.
Search. It might have scared away some candidates.
Butch Davis would have taken the job if he had been certain.
And I think one of the things that Coach Moore really liked was that Franchione had taken a TCU team that wasn't very good and rebuilt it. And he did the same thing when he coached at Pittsburgh State.
Mm-hmm.
He had taken a team that had some issues and made them into a championship team. And that's, I think Coach Moore understood that's what it was going to take because they knew that the issues, the sanctions were going to be tough.
I think under the circumstances, Fran was about as good as they could do.
Taylor said they figured the sanctions were going to be tough. These were some of the more difficult sanctions that any school has had to deal with in recent years. I looked it up in between recording the Mike Dubose podcast and this one. The recent Ole Miss scandal, they got hit with the loss of 13 scholarships. I believe Alabama lost 21 scholarships. Southern Cal during the Reggie Bush scandal lost 30, although, again, these are a little bit of apples to oranges because it's over whatever time period. If it's a spread-out time period, it might not be as difficult. Were they expecting them to be that bad? If you were expecting them to be bad, were you expecting them to be this bad, do you think?
Depends on who you were, you know. Some people did not expect them to be as bad as they were. Some people expected them to be really bad. So If you're asking me, I expected them to be really bad. Now, if you asked Fran, Fran would tell you that he had been told that they would not be that bad. And he believed it until the day they came out. And he believed he had been lied to every day after that day. So, and was immediately started looking to get out. Because he felt, A, because the sanctions were so bad, and B, because he felt like he'd been lied to. Now, two sides of every story. There are also people who will tell you, no, Fran, they made it very clear to Fran what the situation was. So, you know, Dennis's side is one, and other people have another version. So it just depends on who you're saying was doing the expecting.
And a little for the other side was they gave Franchione a 7-year contract, and at the time it was normal to give 5-year.
Right.
So somebody had talked to him and said, look, we're going to give you an extra 2 years because we think the sanctions.
Yeah, but Fran had no confidence in – A, he felt like he'd been lied to, and so he felt like – although he did have the contract and could get the money, he felt like the first 3-8 season he was going to get fired. That, you know. The people who had hired him wouldn't necessarily, or had encouraged him to take the job, wouldn't necessarily stick with him.
I want to read a quick bit from a 2010 story that former Tuscaloosa News sports editor Tommy Dees wrote about the start of the Franchione era, where former Alabama fullback Donnie Lau recalls his first meeting with the team. He said that Fran and the assistant coaches that he had with him at the time all came in, and the players weren't sure who these guys were, where they'd come from, TCU, not the program at the level that it is now. He said they didn't even look like football coaches because they were all in three-piece suits. Franchione, in this story, recalls that at the time, discipline for Alabama was probably at an all-time low, perhaps because of the scandal, perhaps because of Mike Dubose's other issues at Alabama. How important was it just to kind of change what the atmosphere of the program was at that point and try and get things back a little bit under control?
Yeah. Oh, you had to let the players know that it was going to be business. You know, you had to do that. And I think, you know, I think for that time, I think Fran did pretty well. Again, it was tough circumstances and things had gotten, there'd been considerable slippage, so from that standpoint, he was, you know, he was sort of what was needed, as far as A, not having any particular connections to any of those, didn't recruit any of those guys, didn't
right.
really know them, and B, having, we talked in the last podcast with Mike Dubose that Mike hadn't been a head coach. Dennis had been a head coach a long time now. A lot of it was at Pittsburgh State. But he knew how to be a head coach. So I think that he was a complicated person, but I think at that time he was the right person to implement some of those things.
I don't think he had been a head coach, but he had never been a head coach at a place like the University of Alabama.
No.
And I think it took him to realize that the other stuff, he could do the coaching, but the other stuff was what really, I think, gave him fits.
No, he was, you know, I mean, nobody's perfect at that, but Fran was okay with, I mean, you know, people, he was... He was personable enough, and people liked him enough. He just felt like he'd been lied to from the day that the sanctions came out.
So only 2 seasons at Alabama, 7-5 in 2001, including 4-4 in the conference, 10-3 in 2002, including 6-2 in the conference, ineligible for the postseason there in that 2002 season. What was the high point for the Dennis Franchione era at Alabama?
On the field, beating Auburn in 2001. No question about it.
Which would have been – no, they did play in a bowl game in 2001. I'm sorry.
Beat Iowa State.
Yeah.
Into Independence.
Iowa State really missed that field goal.
The 2001 seven, – finishing 7-5 in 2001 is a huge
– after how far things had fallen in the last season under Mike Dubose. Yeah.
And remember, in 2002, he beat LSU, who was coached by Nicholas Saban.
Didn't just beat him. pounded them.
He also beat Tennessee too in 2002, which was big.
Yeah, so yeah, Fran had big wins, but the Auburn win in 2001, no question, was his biggest win. And the fans, you know, nobody's universally beloved. I always thought and have told him, this is not some podcast secret, that he probably underestimated the amount of support that he would have had if they had had a difficult season in 2003. But his opinion is different than my opinion on that. He feels like they would have had a hard time. You know, again, they'd have once again been under postseason sanctions. He knew how difficult it was to recruit in following those sanctions. And, you know, again, he felt like if it slipped back, if they lost to Auburn, which they did in 02, sort of an upset, but had that been a consistent pattern in 02, 03, he felt like he was going to get fired. And so he had looked at other jobs. Texas A&M came with a huge career-changing payday.
And yet hadn't Alabama offered him an extension after the 2002 season?
They did.
A pretty significant extension at that, right? It was, a 10-year extension?
A lengthy extension. But again, you know, sometimes you...
At that point, he felt like the ground had shifted underneath him.
Yeah. He didn't trust the people he was working for. I'm not saying he shouldn't have. You know, I think he underestimated the amount of support that he would have had, but it's what it boiled down to. He didn't trust the people.
Yeah. At this point, we usually talk about the low point. Would it be safe to say that his exit and the way he left for Texas A&M was the low point of his tenure?
Yeah, he didn't handle it very well.
No. The loss to Auburn, too.
At the end of 2002?
Yeah, that was because expectations were that we were going to beat Auburn.
Beat Auburn, and at that point you have 11 wins, even though you can't play in the postseason.
That was not the last game of the year, by the way.
That's right. The Hawaii.
They played in Hawaii.
Okay.
Which was a great idea.
Did you get to go to Hawaii, Cecil?
Sure.
Yeah. To me, that was a great idea. You can't go to a bowl game, so let's get the team. We'll go to Hawaii and play. They did it. Did it Coach Sula's first year, right?
Not only did I get to go to Hawaii, I got to spend the next week in Hawaii because I had taken a week of vacation. And, of course, Fran at that point starts flying around all over the country and going to College Station, and I'm on the Big Island trying to get him on the telephone. You know, so I've never really forgiven him for spoiling my week.
What was the best thing that you expensed during your trip out to Hawaii, if you can recall that far back?
I don't know. You know, I'm not a. I mean, you know me. I don't. I'm sure I've expensed a roadside pineapple. That's more my thing in Hawaii than anything else. You know, you'd go on some of these trips with Tommy D's. Tommy and I did find a good steakhouse in Hawaii because that's what Tommy likes to do. So we found one.
Yeah, back when you could put a steak on the Tuscaloosa News expense account.
Yeah, and Tommy and I are on the Loop Road. Can't remember if this was in 02 or 03, but it was in there somewhere. And a lot of people listening have been to Oahu, and there's a loop road around it. It's really, you know, kind of windy and along the coast. And I said, Tommy, I think we missed our exit. And Tommy immediately takes a flat U-turn right in the middle of that road. And, you know, people honking their horn, but we'd pass the steakhouse exit, so what are you going to do?
We love Tommy, but he is not the best driver.
Just a dead U-turn. Like, you know, it's like you're on a volcanic island, and there's the ocean on one side, and there's this volcanic rock on the other. But had to get to that exit.
I think Cecil might be exaggerating. He's like, Tommy D's was driving in Hawaii, pulled a U-turn on the road with lava on one side and an ocean cliff on the other side.
I promise you. No, what mainly was on both sides were angry Hawaiians, more so than perilous environmental conditions.
All right.
The greatest export of Hawaii was Lincoln Taylor Williams, my first grandson, was born in Hawaii.
There we go.
Congratulations.
Okay.
He just turned 9, by the way.
All right. So Franchione had been asked about the Texas A&M job publicly around the time of the Iron Bowl and said he wasn't going to take it. Is that correct? or deny that he was.
He had parsed
in it,
words. So. Yeah, he had given the "I'm the coach at Alabama" answer.
Right. It's the thing where you don't say "I am not taking the job," but you just say "I'm really happy to be where I am, and I hope that I'm going to be here."
Exactly. Exactly. And Fran still, despite the fact that they lost, the Auburn game, people didn't like, but they'd had a good year. They'd won 10 games. They'd beaten LSU like a drum. So what made Fran unpopular was not how he coached on the field. It was the way he left.
The other part of his exit that everyone remembers is that he didn't tell the players in person. There was a video conference, right?
Yeah.
I read about this because obviously I wasn't following Alabama football at this point, and I wondered what a video conference in 2001 or 2002 looked like. Were there just 6 pixels on the screen?
I guess.
Can you even tell that it's the head coach at that point?
Might have been just a squawk box, you know.
Yeah.
It may not have been a with a framed photograph up above.
Everyone's in the conference room hunched over the telephone.
It was not today where they have the IMAX theater that they have in the football complex.
In any event, I think a lot of players probably felt a little bit betrayed by this because they'd been taught so much about trying to buy into what they had
hold
to
the
do.
Rope. Yeah. That was Fran's slogan. Hold the rope.
Yeah. And there was an actual rope.
There was a rope. There was an actual rope.
Which
and
the Bryant Museum has.
There you go.
Mm. Is it on display or is it back in the archives?
Not anymore. It was on display for a while.
Do you ever hold it? Just for old time's sake.
Do y'all have any bobbleheads left? Or
we
were
do.
They all
I
destroyed?
Have one in my office.
Good for you. Most of them got run over, smashed with golf clubs. Mm. You know, it wasn't, you know, Fran had just mishandled it, and it was just the idea that he had sold this. We're going to get through this together, and we're going to make it. And
then he
walks out the door.
Yeah.
Then he walks out the door.
I might be wrong about this, and Cecil and I didn't talk about it before we started recording the podcast. I think that I've heard stories about this where it had leaked onto Texas A&M message boards or something because there was some very high-ranking Texas A&M alumni who knew about it and was just posting incognito on a message board, and that was how this all came out, or that was where it was first – that was where the first awareness of this came from. Is that the case? Do you recall?
No, I was in Hawaii, so I don't recall.
Good for you.
I was not scanning any Texas A&M message board. I had heard it from people at Alabama, you know. I'd had that conversation. But you know, whether that predated the goags.com, I don't know.
Yeah. How significant of a hit was this, not just to lose your coach, but to lose the coach while you're in the middle of all these sanctions? The next guy who's coming in doesn't have any question about what he's facing. He knows what he's walking into.
Right. If you've got much sense, you know you're not going to get a great coach. I mean, I shouldn't say not great. You know it's going to be a difficult search. Let me put it that way. And that you're going to have candidates who are not going to be interested, not because Alabama is not under normal circumstances a great job, but because those sanctions were in place and nobody thought they could come in and win in 03, 04, 05. Maybe by 05 you would have thought you could, but... you know, that not only was he not going to do what he said he would do and hold the rope and do all that stuff, but he was putting Alabama in a position where they were having to get involved in a coaching search with one hand. I guess he took the rope and tied one hand behind their back.
Yeah. So only a 2-year tenure for him here. Who were the best players of the era?
D'Amico Ryan had to be the... He recruited D'Amico, right?
Mm-hmm.
D'Amico was maybe the best player we've had in a long time.
Derek Pope was a really good player. You know, several of the players that had been left from Mike Dubose.
Brody Kroll.
He did recruit Brody, although Brody didn't play much until later. more for Mike Shula. But, yeah, so they had, you know, they had really good players in, still in 01. Anthony Bryant, you know, he went on to the NFL, played nose tackle. So, no, the cupboard wasn't bare when Fran took over. And I think he was afraid it was going to get bare. But you don't win 10 games without good players.
Mark Anderson, Todd Bates, Charlie Peppera,
mm-hmm.
And Evan Mathis, who had an 11-year pro career.
Right.
Super Bowl champion Evan Mathis.
11 years.
Guy Alabama fans probably don't talk about much, but for a period was one of their longest-running representatives in the pros. You know?
And Sean Williams. Sean, S-A-T.
Shawd. Yeah.
Great ball player. And yep. was on the HBO TV show, Borak. No, what was that? Anyway.
I can't remember the
television show that.
Yeah, Shawd was a great player. Sasha Barrett Cohen came here with one of his HBO productions.
Do you know who that is?
Yes, I do. Was it Ollie G or was it?
He was Ollie G. Okay. Yeah, he was Ollie G.
Ollie G preceded. Yes.
He was Ollie G, and he got out on the field and danced around with the cheerleaders and went in the locker room, got a media credential. And because HBO had requested we're doing this without telling.
That was the shtick. They wouldn't tell.
Without telling that. They just, HBO, we'd like to come cover the Ole Miss game or whatever game it was. I can't remember which game it was. But, you know, so he goes in and. Locker room, and he's interviewing Wesley Britt about his position on same-sex marriage and that sort of thing. So Wesley was a great player also.
Yes.
Don't want to forget Wesley.
Okay. Lessons learned from this two-year period? Perhaps the...
Don't credential HBO would be the first.
Don't spend an extra week in Hawaii. Or do, but there will be consequences.
Fortunately... the next year, they also, I guess we hadn't moved on to Mike Shula yet, but I don't know that it would come up.
You just skipped a whole podcast season.
I did mention to Mike that if he resigned after the 2003 Hawaii game, when I also took a week off, that I'd track him down. So, anyway, you know, I think that... Again, and it's a recurring theme in these podcasts, whether it's with Coach Bryan or with Gene Stallings, it requires a certain inner capacity to handle the job and a certain stature to handle the job. And I think that Fran's ultimate failing was that he wasn't 100% confident that he could do it under very difficult circumstances, to be fair, nor was he confident that he would have support from the Alabama fan base. And what it really takes is somebody who's like, well, you know, I don't care about all that. I know how to win. I'm going to go out and win. I have never understood what happened with Fran at Texas A&M, where he was an unmitigated disaster. I don't know what all the circumstances were. When he took the job, I thought he would be successful, although he was there obviously at a time when Mac Brown had Texas at a national championship level and was competing with Texas and Oklahoma, which was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
But whether there's been a theory, I was not in College Station, I can't confirm this. I have heard people say that the Texas A&M players looked at how he had left Alabama and never trusted him.
Mm.
That may or may not be. You'd have to ask an Aggie.
Yeah. One of the lessons that I considered looking at this is perhaps that, and you could talk about this with some of the other coaches. I think it's interesting and perhaps valuable that we're finding some similar lessons or some similar threads among some of these coaches. Because by the time you get to Nick Saban, you see Alabama kind of connect the dots, whether that was done intentionally or whether they just got the right guy. One of the things that you probably needed to learn about this is you needed to have the coach on the same page as the athletic director and as the president, whether that's in having support from the staff, from the administration, or just being aware of what the situation was. Like, I'm not saying that anyone misled him as to what the NCAA sanctions were going to be, but if that's how he felt like they were never all on the same page together, then that might have caused some of the underlying issues, which ended up being the end of the Dennis Franchione era.
And my memory's a little fuzzy, but I believe by 2002, Sorensen had left, and Mason was the interim president of the university. So they had not quite hired Dr. Witt. Yeah, I think that's right.
So at that point, he really might not have felt like he was on the same page or had the backing that he wanted.
Yeah. So one more thing before we go that I found interesting was that in his first season, which was 2001,
right,
which was 9/11, we actually played another game after Auburn. He played Southern Miss in a horrible rain-soaked game in Legion Field.
Did they cancel the games the weekend after 9/11?
They canceled 9/11.
Right.
So that was the third time since we started the renewal with Auburn in 48 that we had played a regular season game after.
Yeah, it's three straight years that Auburn won the last game because they went to Hawaii the next year.
Oh, that's
years.
Right. Well,
before that, excuse me.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to end up talking about the grade for this hire. What would you guys peg it as? Kind of a difficult one, considering he was not unsuccessful in his 2 years. But
I'd give Fran a C. You know, Fran went 17-8. You know, that's good at some places, particularly under the circumstances and who he had to compete with.
And what he inherited, coming in from a 3-8 season.
Yeah, so I'd give Fran a C.
I think he's an easy B if he doesn't leave the way he did. But I'm with Cecil, C+, because he did great on the field. He was a good football coach.
Okay. Anything else that we need to talk about? Anything that we haven't covered here?
I can't imagine what it would be.
Okay. I do want to mention, somebody emailed me last week, Cecil. Since we're recording these podcasts a couple at a time, this will probably be several weeks after you guys might have listened to the Bill Curry podcast. Someone asked what Cecil thought of the brick incident with Bill Curry, which we did not mention on that podcast. We're not going to get into it here, but if you guys have any other questions about this podcast or any other ones, then maybe once we're all done, we'll do one final recap podcast, or we'll talk about the start of the Saban era or something, and we'll cover some of that stuff. So if you guys have anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd like to hear, you can email me at ben.jones@tuscaloosanews.com, and I'll try and save that for later on. Taylor, would you like to plug these in real quick?
We're open 9 to 4 daily. It's only $2 to get in. We've changed up a lot of stuff. We've got a new multimedia wall. We've added some stuff to Coach Saban's area. So just please visit us. Bring your family in. It's a fun time.
Okay. If you guys have been enjoying this series, we would really appreciate it if you left us a rating or a review. The deal I've mentioned on some of the other podcasts, if we get to 100 five-star ratings, then I'll stop asking you guys for ratings or reviews for 10 podcasts. You won't have to listen to me say this. We really appreciate it when you guys do that. We like it when you do that. I don't like to ask you, but if I don't ask you, then I've found that you don't do it. So here I am asking you. And when you do it, then I'll stop asking you. All right. Thanks, folks. Be sure to check back next time for the Mike Price podcast.